welcome to GG Radio. Hope you guys are doing great today. I've got a great show for you today. I have a great pleasure of doing the show with a great friend of mine who has worked for Native Nations for the last 20 years at casinos like Sandia, Isleta, Pechanga, and currently is the Chief Operating Officer of Casino del Sol, Mr. Steve Neely. Steve, are you there?
I'm here. Good to hear from you, Tina.
How are you, buddy?
Doing great. Fighting a little bit of a thunder lightning storm in advance of a Matchbox 20 show in Tucson, but yeah. In other words, another normal day in the month of August in Tucson.
You guys got Matchbox 20 tonight?
Yes. Yeah, it's going to be a great
show.
That's
great. Yeah, it's going to be a great act. And you're big on entertainment, and I know you got some the great acts down there, so that's a good thing. So Steve,
yeah, we've been blessed.
Yeah, you got some great. What other acts have you had there? You've had Kiss, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, 2 years ago, we actually won the award for the best entertainment, you know, arena and amphitheater in the country.
Wow.
But since then, we've had everyone. In fact, the last show of Van Halen with Sammy Hagar was in our amphitheater. That was their last show. So
wow.
It was all our fault that Sammy left, I guess. But no, last year we had Kiss, we had Enrique Iglesias. This year, I mean, we have Snoop Dogg. It seems like every year he's always a lot of fun. But we had Journey a couple weeks ago. We've got Toby Keith coming up, as well as, tonight Matchbox 20, of course, is a big one. Rob Zombie's going to be coming in right around Halloween. So, yeah, it's
wow.
A lot of fun. And, we've kind of carved out our niche. We're the premier entertainment facility in Tucson. If you want, music for sure, this is the place to go.
That's great. And we're going to come back and talk about that a little bit, how our business is diversifying into those areas. But I wanted to go back, and, our show is a lot about the people's character and who they are. And how it relates to the casino business. But I wanted to go back a little bit, you growing up as a kid. Tell me, where you grew up, what it was like, what you thought you were going to do when you grew up. Tell us a little bit about Steve growing up.
Well, it's kind of hard to believe where I'm at now from where I started. I literally was, a farm kid from a little pinto bean community in Dove Creek, named Dove Creek, Colorado. Right in the Four Corners region. So I was 8 miles from the Utah border and about 50 miles from the New Mexico border. Just a kind of a high desert area, very agriculture, very poor. And, kind of growing up in that space, my grandparents were farmers, of course. My dad was a miner and construction worker. So people that come from that part of the country, they really don't see how big the world is. And all I knew at the time is I didn't want to be there when I was able to get away. And I think I took the first bus out of town. No, I'm kidding. Actually, to get off the farm, basically, I went into the military and had to get enough money to go to college, enrolled in college. And then after that, the rest is kind of history. But if I went back
how old were you when you left your hometown?
I actually left about 6 months after I graduated from high school, so I was 18.
Okay. And what did you think you were going to end up doing? I mean, what was your vision of, where you would be? Did you know at that time?
I didn't, but some of my early memories, again, as a farm kid, one of the best inventions ever is when they figured out that you could put a radio in the cab of a tractor and you're driving out in the field. And I finally had a radio station I could listen to, and I have a extreme love of music. And back early in life, I really wanted to manage the actual radio station I was listening to. And it was just, it had a big influence on me at the time and helped me get through some rough stretches. And I'm proud to say that by the time I was 26 years old, I was actually managing that radio station.
No, that's amazing. That's so cool. So you went to the
Yeah.
military, and then after the military, did you go? How long were you in the military for?
I had an active duty contract for 2 years, and then I was on in the National Guard for 6 after that. So while I was in the
Got it.
National Guard, I was going to college, and while in college, as a part of my contract, being in the National Guard, a little thing called Operation Desert Storm kicked up, and come to find out later, the unit I was in was a very specialized unit that there were not a lot of resources in the regular army to fulfill the mission, so we were one of the first units that got activated when the buildup in the Middle East started. So
Wow.
I was about halfway through a fall semester in college. I was taking 18 credit hours. I was managing an RV park, and I had a newborn at home. And about halfway through the semester, I get the call in the middle of the night saying, "Yeah, go ahead and pack up your stuff and report to the armory, the National Guard armory in 24 hours." And
Wow.
so there you go. So then our
That's
unit was
amazing.
deployed,
So,
and yeah.
how long were you there for?
My total time was about 8 months between all
Got it.
the stuff stateside as well as all the stuff in the Middle East. We ended up over there for about 7 8 months, and then came back and decided I was going to go ahead and change my college major. I didn't want to be a teacher anymore, so I changed to business with an emphasis in marketing. And then finished up my enlistment with the military about the same time as I graduated from college, and actually went to work for the radio station that I listened to all those years from the cab of the tractor.
Wow, that's amazing. Just an amazing story. Now, you have a very interesting story that not a lot of people know about that I just love about how you got into the casino business because it was just a chance meeting, but you were working, was it in a car lot or something?
Yeah, after about 5 years between radio and television and just driving in the Four Corners, a very remote, very rural area. So I spent a lot of time between Cortez, Colorado, Farmington, Mexico, Durango, Colorado, just big circle going around and around. And I just got really tired of that drive more than anything else. So I went to work for one of my clients, for my best client, which happened to be a car dealership in Cortez, Colorado. And by this time, I grew up in Dove Creek, which is north of there, about 40 miles. So I kind of returned home, just not back to my hometown. So I went to work, there in Cortez, and just so happened one Saturday afternoon, the general manager for the local casino, I saw him out walking on the lot, and I knew him from my radio days. I mean, I knew who he was. I didn't know him per se. And saw him out on the lot walking around, and so I went out to help him, and the guy that would normally help him, because he was a big account of ours, he happened to not be there that day. So I ended up getting him what he needed, talking to him. I think he wanted to get away from home for that afternoon for whatever reason. So we ended up just talking for about 3 hours. And I had previously applied to the casino when I was in, after I graduated from college, because I had a degree in marketing, and I thought that would be a great gig. Well, about 3 months after that, just that day, I get a call from his wife, who was the director of HR, and she said, "Hey, can you, you know, first of all," she said, "can you talk?" And that's always an interesting way to start a conversation. And she said, "Hey, I don't know if you know it or not, but our director of marketing recently left, and Renee wanted me to reach out to you and see if there was any interest on your part. We know you have a good job there, but just thought we'd see." And I don't think she completely said the sentence. And I, yes. I'm these cars. The scene never changes out the window of my cubicle. So I'm very interested in talking, getting together and talking, and you know, and it was lucky, but you know, the being in the right place at the right time. I'm a big believer. In some respects, you make your own luck, and an opportunity and preparation when they meet, and I just dove into. I got the position. I literally took a more than 50% pay cut to get into the business. But what I figured out right away is I had a true aptitude for the business. I had good instincts, and I had a lot of support from management as I transitioned into the casino marketing world. And also, radio was a great learning ground for casino marketing.
Yeah,
especially at the time, because database marketing was just starting to become a thing. You know, players clubs were just starting to hit the casino floors, and so a lot of what was going on at the time was a lot of promotions, a lot of media, and all of those were things that I had a good background in, coming from radio and television. So it was the right place at the right time, and had the right person helping me get into the business. And after that, it was all effort and sacrifice, and it's been a lot of fun.
Now, there's a little twist to the story, because when you went to the casino, so what you got to do, tell me what happened. I think it was 10 years before that. There was a little incident, right?
Well,
That's an interesting twist to the story.
I might have been a little bit of a rebellious teenager. I was on the wrestling team and the football team, and so in an area like that, there's a lot of smaller towns, and we're all rivals in football and baseball or whatever, but we all end up at the same parties. And so I just happened to show up at a party one Saturday night, and maybe exchanged a few blows with someone from another school, and then left the area just to get away. And unbeknownst to me, the person who was going to be three offices down from where I was sitting was at the time of the little incident was a deputy sheriff for the Montezuma County, which was Cortez, for the police department. His name was Steve Penhall. And come to find out later, Steve had been looking for me for pretty aggressively that day, trying to figure out what was going on. And then when he found out I was joining the team, he popped in to just let me know he was going to be keeping his eye on me. He had transitioned from law enforcement to casino management, and so now we were colleagues. But like you said, 10 years prior to that, we were I was on the run from him without realizing it.
Yeah, that must have been funny. He's 10 years before that, he was looking for you, and then now he's your coworker.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
And then later
he's a great guy.
Yeah, and since that time, he's been my boss three times. So it worked out okay.
Unbelievable. Tell me a little bit about the first gig and what you learned about Native Gaming and Native Nations. What was the thing that you learned the most there?
You know, the first thing that was obvious to me was it was a different environment than anything I'd ever been in before. And, I'd never dealt with, tribal preference, for example. I'd never dealt with an ownership structure that was basically a big family business. The first property I was at was, Ute Mountain Casino there in Southwest Colorado. And, less than 2,000 tribal members, and about 45% of the property was was comprised of tribal members, and about the same percentage were, Navajo, another tribe. So it was kind of an interesting introduction into, tribal preference, tribal dynamic, but it also really taught me a lot about how important the casino is to the overall welfare of the tribe. So much of what the tribe depended on came from the revenue of the casino. And while I was there, little things you don't think about. Like, a wastewater treatment plant, for example, that allowed the citizens to actually have clean water that they could, use from their own land, from their own well, and not have to purchase water from, the neighboring city, from Cortez. So that was a big improvement for them, sewage treatment. And just the overall quality of life was being greatly improved because of the efforts of people, of the people of the casino. And then unemployment at that, for the reservation there prior to the casino was, more than 50%. Now, here's, 250 or so people with good jobs. And, and really just having an opportunity that they'd never had before. And it was a real eye-opener for me because, even growing up in that area, knowing that so many of the, the people from that area were, locked in unemployment and so forth, I didn't realize how bad it was before I got there. So it was a real eye-opener for me.
How did that make you feel, Steve? Because you grew up pretty humble, but this was on a different level, right?
It really was. The first thing I realized is how much I had in common with them. We were all poor kids.
Right.
And, certainly, my dad working in construction was unemployed as much as he wasn't. The difference was, my dad could get a job when the opportunity presented itself, whereas a lot of these guys couldn't. There just weren't a lot of opportunities for them. So when, the first thing was, just a realization of how much we actually had in common, and then a better understanding of what it's like to live in that environment, and knowing that, we have a bigger responsibility as casino employees than just the jobs that we have to do, on a daily basis.
Yeah, there was
basis.
A greater purpose for the people.
There really was. And
yeah.
And I didn't realize it at the time, but I think because that first opportunity was so unique for me and such a life-changing event, I think I truly developed a passion for the tribal side of gaming more so than the commercial side. I've had the opportunity to work in both.
Yeah.
And I certainly enjoy both, but the dynamic on the tribal side is so interesting to me, and the purpose is so much greater when you look at it, at the way it affects people that you will come in contact with. And
yeah,
just,
that's absolutely
very fulfilling.
Well, speaking of that, I know you're a great mentor, and I know that you, when you leave a casino and go to a next casino, you make sure that everything is in order. Tell us a little bit about that part of it and the responsibility that people like you, who have so much experience, can train native people to be able to carry on in your footsteps. Talk about that a little bit and how you approach that.
Well, I think what you said there was key. The goal I always have is leave anything better than how you found it, and I give my grandparents credit for that. That was their mindset that they instilled in me, as a kid, and I, ended up spending many years living with my grandparents, and it just became part of who I am, and it just carry that forward with me in other professions throughout my career. And when I look at, the people that I interact with, the people on my team, the people, that are in the property, what I see are people who will benefit and who value guidance. And not everyone does. And for the, I tend to gravitate towards the people that are truly focused on making an improvement in themselves as well as contributing, at a high level for their tribe. And for the people that are focused and are willing to take on that, that responsibility, I have nothing but time for those people. And I want them to be immersed in and learn the beauty of marketing, especially learn the beauty of casino operations. And what a fun, challenging, rewarding business we find ourselves in. And if we can't get excited about being in this business, then what can we get excited about? We get paid
It's a great business.
We get paid to throw a party, you know, to make sure that people have a good time when they get here, take care of them, just treat them like good people. And you know, it's not, you know, rocket science. I'm not saying it's a simplistic thing at all. It's very challenging and very complex. But at the end of the day, we want people to feel the same way we would want them to feel when they come to our homes. We want them to feel welcomed.
Mm-hmm.
We want them to feel, now, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to be inviting many of these people to my house. But,
yeah,
you know, we want them to enjoy themselves when they're here. And so I take, you know, kind of an approach with my team that if you truly are hungry and willing to learn, I will take my entire day and dedicate it to you to help you do that. And, you know, I don't have a, you know, the way I work won't work for everyone, but what I try to do is I introduce, you know, a lot of understanding of what the vision is and what the objectives are, and give them some guidance as to, if it were me doing this, I would approach it this way, or in the past I've tackled challenges like these in this way. And once I, you know, and then I let them know what the deadline is and where I'll be when they need help. And
yeah, it's a great,
you know,
great
put them to work.
I know you're great at that. Yeah, I know you're great at that, and everybody I've talked to has praised you for being able to do that. What are some of the most difficult? What are some of the most difficult parts of running a casino, and what advice can you give to others about those lessons that you learned about those difficult parts?
Well, probably it starts and ends with staffing, and it's all about people. And you know, the more difficult situations is that I encounter are when you realize that you don't have the right people in the right jobs. And there are some people that just are not performing at the level that you need them to, and you've got to make an adjustment, whether that is moving that person into a different position, which we tend to do a lot in the tribal gaming side, whether it's moving people around to find the right spot for them. And sometimes we have to move people out because they just aren't willing to invest the energy into doing the things that need to be done for them to be successful. So it really starts and ends with staff. If I can find, I spend the majority of my day working with team members and finding the answers to questions to help them accomplish what it is that they're trying to do. And, you know, I love that having that ability to help people realize their dreams and watch them learn and watch them recognize, you know, when it clicks and you see it in their face. It's one of the most rewarding things that you'll ever experience.
That's great. Yeah, I know, like I said, you're very good at that. Steve, let's talk about the next generation of Native Nation operators, of Native people. In your eyes, how have those people evolved? And what is the most important thing the up-and-coming generation needs to know and understand?
Well, I think the first place I would start would be with non-tribals working in casinos. Number one, we have to recognize that outside of a few of the properties that generate the revenue that aren't as focused on it, the long-term objective of tribes, for the most part, is to be able to run the properties themselves. And we have to respect that. We have to help them get to that level. That's part of our job, planned obsolescence. It's part of what our responsibility to our employers are. And I'm a firm believer, if you do a good job for someone, another door will open up for you when you've completed that job. And it's been the case for me throughout my career. So from a non-tribal side, that's just something we have to come to grips with. Now, with the tribal communities, what I'm seeing is the generation, you know, the 30-somethings that are beginning to move into middle management, and in some cases upper management, they're coming in with a different perspective than their parents and their grandparents did, because they've been around the business for they've had a casino on their reservation for 20 years now, in a lot of cases. So it's not a new thing for them. Many of them have already worked in the casino. We have kids, high school kids that, work in summers at the pools of the casino or in the golf courses and places around it. So they've been around it, most of their life now. And a lot of these have went on, a lot of these young people, I don't want to call them kids because they're young adults now, but a lot of these people recognize that they would have an opportunity later in life if they committed to becoming comfortable in this environment. So a lot of these people have went to college, have got degrees, and are moving into positions of influence within the property. The word of caution I would put out there is, especially at the leadership of the tribe position, whether it's council or board members, whatever it may be, is don't rush the process. I've been doing this for 20 years. You can't expect a tribal director to know what I know in 3 years, in 2 years, and you're going to not set your people up for success. You've got to let the process work, and and the tribal members themselves have to be willing to accept failure. I'd love to be able to sit here and tell you that in 20 years I've never made any mistakes. I've made plenty of mistakes, and we have to give our up-and-coming managers and directors the space to be able to make those mistakes so that they learn from them. And unfortunately, a lot of times in tribal communities, the tribal members themselves don't always get that space. If they make a mistake, their peers are as difficult on them, even more so in a lot of times than non-tribal members. But it's a process that you have to go through in any business. You have to have the opportunity to make success and to make mistakes.
Well, it's interesting what you're saying right now because 2 weeks ago I had Joe Nayakunabi, who's the CEO of Mille Lacs Capital Ventures, and what he was talking about was that the elders made an investment into the new generation, and that was an investment that took 20 years, 15 years to pay off until these people were trained and they sent them to school and they inspired them so that these people now can manage their money, make investments. It takes time. This is what you're saying, right?
Absolutely. And that's, one of the things that has always been interesting to me in working with tribal properties and with tribal nations. I think they have a good understanding. You hear conversation all the time about, the seven generation view of the world. And that's so enlightening and it's so powerful. And I think that for the most part, that's a real thing. Except I don't know that they take that same long view. A lot of tribes take that same long view at the enterprise level. And
Got it.
I think that, it's really important for the long-term success for the people that get put into these positions of responsibility to have enough time to learn the right way and to learn from the right people. And that's really, it's a wonderful thing when you can spend that time with someone and you see them learn and you see them, being able to move into a position without the fear of if I get this wrong. Think about a tribal member working at the casino. This is probably the only place that a lot, just for this scenario, this is the only place they've ever worked, and I see that a lot. And if I am not successful in this role, I don't have any other options. Where am I going to go? What am I going to do? And just the pressure that that puts on someone is just a dangerous thing, if more than, as much as anything else. And it's unfair as well.
Yeah, it's all about the people. Steve, talk a little bit about, what you see in the future, especially as it pertains to native gaming. Where are we headed? What are the things that they need to watch out for? And I know there's a lot of expansion going on, new casinos going up, business is good. Talk a little bit about the future. What you see, what the future holds for Native Nations and their gaming.
The first thing that I would say is I have some concern, and you know, casinos themselves are the lifeblood of many of these tribes. You know, without the revenue that they get from the casino, they simply can't support the programs that they've been able to put together. However, casino revenues have hit a point where you're not seeing 10 and 15% increases year over year. We've matured. We've got to a point now where, you know, we have a good income stream. We're stable as a business. We have the necessary financing instruments in place to be able to expand our properties as necessary. However, we're hitting a point where to grow revenue, to continue to give the tribe what they need, we're going to be running, it's going to be difficult to do so. And you think about if the natural rate of inflation is 3%, and we're growing our slot revenue, 3 to 5%, well, that's great. That means we're going to be able to give the tribe the same, a little bit more money every year. The problem is their expense is also growing at the rate of inflation. So they're growing, at 3 to 5% in need every year. So we give them an extra 3%. They're actually flat. They're just barely able to continue doing what they've been doing. They need us to give them 6% a year. And, and we can't. It's just we're without making some serious changes to how we operate. And because of the number of tribal members that we have working for us, that becomes a very difficult challenge in of itself. So, and then, when you look at like Las Vegas, for example, when things kind of matured, so, MGM goes and buys out Steve Wynn. Okay. I can't, here in Tucson, I can't buy out Desert Diamond because another tribe owns that property, and I can't open up another casino off, in another part of town off the reservation. We're restricted. So we have got to find a way to diversify our revenues, or we risk, we're still going to generate a lot of revenue for the tribe, but there does reach a point where the tribes are going to have to scale back on what they're able to provide for their members if they don't find alternate methods of revenue. And I think Joe is a great example of, in his tribe, of tribes that have done that very successfully. And a lot of tribes would do well to learn, from these guys that have gone into other businesses with the revenue that they get from the casino as backing. It's allowed them to diversify and find new things to do.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you said that because Joe was telling us on the interview that, they diversified because of necessity, because of what you just said, because their growth is only 1%. And so they realized this a number of years ago, and they started putting things in place to diversify. But what he said, which was key, I hadn't heard this before, is that we're diversifying in the business that we know about. We know about hospitality. That's why we bought the hotels.
We want to get involved in hospitality.
Right. We don't necessarily know about some other fields. Creating plastic bottles or lumber or something like that, lumber business. But we do know about hospitality, and so he was stressing that when Native Nations get into other ventures, to try and pick something that they know about and that they can not be a passive investor, but an active investor. And that's what you're talking about, right?
Absolutely. And you think about, in Joe's scenario, buying other hotels. Well, they have a great training ground already. So they have you have a shift manager running one of running your casino hotel. You buy a hotel in St. Paul or wherever. You now have a trained person ready to take over a hotel of their own. And they already understand the systems that you're going to use, the processes you're going to use, and know how to schedule, how to budget, all those things that are critical. They've been taught your way and how you do it.
Yeah.
And it just makes for, and then they fill their team, and you now have bench strength to move into the next operation, and then you've already got policies and procedures. They all know how to do things. They understand what the expectation is, and you just keep building on what you're already strong at. It's a great way to go
mm-hmm.
about it.
Yep. All right. Let's open it up to some questions. We got a lot of people on hold here. Hang on one sec. Hello, it's GT Radio. Do you have a question for Mr. Neely? Hello, hello. Can you hear us? Steve, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay.
We must have scared away the first one.
Hello, GT Radio. All right, we'll go to the next one. Hang on a sec. Hello, hello. This is GT Radio. Do you have a question for Mr. Neely?
Hi, Tino. It's Rich. How are you?
Hey, Rich. How are you?
Hello.
Do you have
a
question for Mr. Neely here?
Yes, I do. In your career so far, is there any event that stands out that you're most, proud of at this point?
Probably the signature event for me was when we opened the new Sandia Casino in Albuquerque. That was the biggest thing that I had done to that point in my career. And all the, it was a year in the making, really, if you think about it, the branding that had to get put in place beforehand, being a part of the construction team and watching all those pieces coming together. And then, all the stuff around opening that had to get organized. But the thing that stands out to me more than anything else was standing inside the casino with a line of people literally stretched at least 3/4 of a mile, if not a mile, down the road, people just standing to get in. And we opened the door, and just the group of people coming towards us that wanted to see the casino and the look in their eye and just the adrenaline and the excitement that was in the air, without question, the most exciting thing I've ever been a part of and something I'll always cherish.
Great. Thank you, Rich. Thank you. All right, let's go to the next question. Hello, hello. This is GT Radio. You have a question for Mr. Neely. Hello.
I think you need a class on operating the phone, Tino.
I think my blog talk radio is not working well. Hang on one sec. We'll go to the next caller. Hang on one sec. Let's see here what we got. All right, here we go here. Hello, hello.
Steve.
This is GT Radio. I have a question for Mr. Neely.
Steve.
Hello,
Steve.
Hello.
Steve.
Hello.
Can you hear us?
Steve. Yeah,
we
Steve.
Can hear you. Hello.
Steve. Are you there?
Hello. Good. Yes, we're here. Do you have a question for Mr. Neely?
Yeah, Steve. Can your past and how you dealt with the casino business, how do you think your past has really helped you dealing with what you're dealing with now?
If I understood the question, just how did my career, how did my history help me prepare for what I'm dealing with today? Is that what the question was?
Yes, correct.
Yes.
Well, that's a great question. Having just moved into a new role with the property, certainly a lot more responsibility. I think the thing that's helped me the most is just the people I've had the opportunity to work with in the past and learn from, especially people that were in the position I'm in now, and seeing the people that were successful in this role, what made them successful, and trying to emulate that, and also adding my flavor to it, if you will, and my approach to things. But certainly I've had the great fortune over the years of working with some phenomenal people, and they've all, had a great influence on me and have allowed me to learn from mistakes and try some things that maybe none of us knew how it was actually going to turn out. But they supported me through the effort, and I'd like to think that I'm someone that would approach things in a similar fashion.
Yeah, so you, like you said, it's all about the people, right?
It really is.
Yeah, it's all about the people. All right, thank you very much. Let's go to the next question here. Let me see what we got. Try here.
I feel like we should have a commercial break in here somewhere, Tina. What's going on?
I know. Hello, TT Radio. You have a question for Mr. Neely. Hello, GT Radio, you have a question for Mr. Neely? I guess not. Okay, go to the next one. Hold on 1 second. Let's see here. Okay. Hello, GT Radio, do you have a question for Mr. Neely?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, we can.
Hey, Tino, it's Wayne over in New York. How you doing?
Hey, good. How are you, Wayne? You have a question for Mr. Neely?
Yeah. Hey, Steve, how you doing? Just to kind of follow up on the last train of thought that you were going through. For somebody that's relatively new into the casino business, any advice on breaking in and making sure that they learn the business, to have the type of success that you've had?
Well, Wayne, thanks for the call. I think the first thing I would tell people, similar to what I was talking about with the tribe and developing their people, is be patient and pay attention. I think a lot of times we, especially if you're not familiar with the tribal community, you have a tendency to want to move very quickly in an area that may be uncomfortable for someone, and rather than continuing and trying to push something down someone's throat, it may take some time to communicate and over communicate and get people comfortable with what it is that you're trying to do. I know early in my career I struggled with this because I was so excited to be in the business. I wanted to get everything done right away, and you end up burning yourself out and getting exhausted. And that proved to, it worked for me. I got through it okay, but in hindsight, I would have been better served to maybe focus on a few less things and put more effort into making those much better and just, being patient and being diligent.
Patience.
Thank you.
Thanks, Wayne.
That was very, very.
Oh, glad it worked for you.
Thank you, Wayne. Thank you. All right, let's try the next one here. Got a few more. Hello, this is GT Radio. You have a question for Mr. Neely. Hello, GT Radio. You have a question for Mr. Neely.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can now. Who's this?
Cool. This is Steve Earnhardt.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
Good, you?
Good, good. What do you got? I got a question for Steve.
Here's a question for you. A lot of young kids are entering the workforce, and we often hear the bust on millennials. And when I go to casinos, whether they're tribal or almost anywhere else, it looks like a lot of them are a lot older. You have a lot of older generation, 65-plus, playing a lot of the slots and everything else. Do you think there's a potential aging out of the people within as employees, and what are you doing to help age in a new generation into slots and everything else? So getting that new generation as employees and as players.
Great question, and thanks for the call, Steve. I'll pay you later. No, that's actually a two-part challenge. The first part is, from the casino side, Steve's exactly right. You look around the floor of the casino, you don't see a lot of people under 40 playing slot machines. I would wager that if you went back 20 years, you would not have seen a lot of people under 40 playing slot machines. People at that age just don't have the money. They're still trying to figure out what they're going to do with their life when they grow up. They're trying to find, their spouse, their career, figure out if they're going to have kids, and if they are, if their kids are going to be delinquents or good. All that stuff's in front of them. Mm-hmm. So playing at a slot machine is quite a ways down the road for them. The challenge is when you look at the number of people in the baby boomer generation, the number of people that are Gen Xers like us, mm-hmm. and then the number of millennials, you have this saddle. There just aren't as many Gen Xers as there were all those other people. So there's this bridge we have to get over to get from baby boomers to millennials. Then you add on top of that the game mix. You know, you hear a lot of conversation about, you know, the slot machines don't appeal to millennials. They want more social. They want this. They want that. The reality is we don't know what they really want yet.
Sure.
We just know that if we had exactly what they want, we probably wouldn't be making very much money from them because they don't have any.
Yeah, good point.
So that's the first challenge. The second challenge is learning how to talk to millennials as employees. And I actually read a report yesterday that was very just probably the best report I've seen so far on what really does drive millennials. And, you know, the passion that, you know, that's still there. I mean, I think the knock on them is they don't want to work as hard as other people, that their time is more valuable, this, that, and the other thing. The reality is they're very similar to – they want a lot of the same things that everyone always wants. They want to be successful. They want to be able to pay for the things that are important to them. But they don't want a job. They want to be a part of something. They don't want a boss. They want a coach. And there's a lot of things that we as mentors are going to have to learn to do differently than how we were taught. You know, my first boss was not necessarily a coach. He wasn't even a mentor. He was more of a dictator, and 'cause he was a drill sergeant in the Army. And I didn't get to ask for a lot of things. I got told what I was going to do, when I was going to do it, how I was going to do it. And if I didn't do it, I did push-ups or I ran.
Yep.
And that doesn't work with the millennials. And so I think, you know, it's a two-headed monster. Not only do we have the business challenge of what are we going to do when the baby boomers, you know, they're retiring. A lot of them are hitting the upper echelon where they're, you know, going to the, you know, happy casino in the sky. And we don't have enough people behind them to bridge the gap until millennials get there and have enough money to be worth something to us.
Of your casino games, what's the most successful with the millennial or even anyone under the age of 35?
You know, it's kind of interesting. I don't know that I've broken it down to that level for that age group per se. But anecdotally, you know, you do see a lot more of our millennials in table games, you know, having a good time. I actually see more of them at the bar than I see on a slot machine. And, you know, it makes sense.
That's for sure.
Trying to –
Yeah, it makes sense.
You know, they're socializing with their friends. They can afford to –
Well, Vegas is redefined themselves with the clubs. They're all in the clubs. They're not, you know, playing – they're gambling. They're buying tables for their friends. It's the same kind
they
of
are,
thing.
They are at some point – you know, I don't know if it's at 30, 35, 40. At some point, you know, they're going to have to pivot again because, you know, how old can you be buying a table at the club and not be creepy?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure, sorry, one last follow-up question. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, when they're at those bars, are they playing the poker games and things like that at the bar?
We have a pretty good play there. I think the other thing about millennials is they can't do just one thing. They, you know, and I can say this because I have two of them in my house, and they have hyper ADD. And, you know, they have to have the TV on when they're doing their homework. They have to have music on when they're reading. You know, they've got to, you know, that second screen is really, you know, that third screen. They've got to be doing a lot of different things simultaneously to stay engaged, which actually is a good thing from a casino side because so many of our games have that ability to, you know, hit multiple senses simultaneously.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks,
Steve. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Next question here. Okay. Hold on one sec. Let me see here. Okay, right here. Hello, this is GT Radio. You have a question for Mr. Neely. Hello, hello. Hello.
So have you noticed it's every other call you take you actually get?
I know. I wonder why. I guess they're like not really into it or something. Hang on. Hang on one second. Let me check this one out. Hello, hello. This is GT Radio. You have a question for Mr. Neely. Hello.
Right. Sure. As soon as I say okay. that, we go Steve, two in a row.
Yeah, of course. Steve, I wanted to expand a little bit on what you had said about the millennials, and you know, before we sign off here, and you know, how are you, and how do you think the you know, like you were talking about diversifying, is that an area, because we've seen Vegas reinvent itself, so is that an area where the casinos need to think about reinventing who they are in terms of, you know, getting a little bit more away from the gaming and more into the leisure, or does that even apply to the Native Nations?
You know, I think each property is going to be unique in of itself. I personally would caution too many of, especially locals' properties, to decide, you know what, I'm going to go all in and start pulling out slot machines and putting in nightclubs, because we're not Las Vegas. You know, that's just one of those things. Now, does that mean we can't augment what we do and add some of those things? You know, absolutely. We're actually in the middle of, you know, building a space right now that will allow us to offer, you know, more entertainment in a little bit different environment. But we can't hope to be a Marquee or a Hakkasan. We don't have $85 million to put into, you know, a beach club like they did at the Encore. We're not that. We have to understand what we are and identify things that will help us deliver something that we're not providing now and hold on to what we are that much longer and make us interesting to more people. You know, I'm in a metro of 1 million people. We own two casinos. The tribe across town owns two casinos. And we've added roughly the same number of new members to our players club for the last 8 years. Every month, it's about the same number of people. So there's still a lot of people who are within 30 minutes of me that are interested in what I have today, and I have yet to tap that market. So before I go open up multiple other, you know, other verticals, I still have room to grow what I'm doing now, and I have to augment what I'm doing now with things that will make me more interesting to the people I already have now. And I think that's the
right
mistake a lot of us make, is we think we have to, you know, this is what they're, and I can't tell you how many times I've heard different people in the industry and certainly, you know, tribal council and people like that, well, I saw this in Vegas, it's something we need to do. And that isn't always
yeah.
the case. We have to look and see if what it is makes sense for us. And if I'm in, you know, North Dakota somewhere, or I'm in, you know, I'm certainly Tucson, Arizona, or if I'm in Wisconsin, I'm not going after a Las Vegas customer. I'm going after an Arizona customer or a Minnesota customer or North Dakota or Wisconsin. The needs are different.
Yes, and also, you know, the proverb, if it's not broken, don't fix it, is a good one, because we're always thinking about expanding and trying different things, but what you're saying is build on what you've got and what you're good at.
Yeah, and find what you don't have that makes sense for you. You know,
yeah.
if yep. you know, do you need fine dining? If you don't have it currently, is that something that, you know, the margins are great in fine dining, but you got to be able to do it right. You know, and it's
yeah.
certainly not going to replace a bank of slot machines, but it's going to open up more jobs for tribal members, and it's going to create another reason for people to come see you.
Yep.
You know, entertainment. You know, that's a big part of what we do, especially in tribal casinos, because like here, a lot of the facilities and the locations that we have, we're the only game in town that has the ability to do some of those things. But we got to do it right if we're going to continue
yes.
doing it.
Yes. Okay, Steve, it's been an incredible interview. I thank you so much for everything, and especially for everything that you've done for Native Nations. And we'll hopefully you'll come back on the show, right, if we invite you?
Well, I thank you for the invite. And you know, a lot of credit goes to both you and Golly for putting this outlet together, and having the foresight to do it, and certainly the the guest list you have put together, not counting me, has been very impressive and is very admirable. So, you guys have done a lot yourselves in Native Nations, and I think you deserve a lot of credit as well. So thank you for the invite.
Thanks, Steve. I really appreciate it. And you have a great day, and enjoy the concert tonight.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, my friend. Bye-bye. Oh, that was fantastic. He's such a great guy, and he does so many great things. So that wraps it up for today's show. In 2 weeks, I have Apache Danforth. She's with NATAL. Very interesting woman doing some very interesting things. She's also Ernie Stevens Jr.'s sister, so she comes from great stock. And I had the pleasure of hanging out with her a bit at a conference, and she was so fantastic with everything that she had to say that I invited her on the show. So in 2 weeks, don't forget to tune in for Apache Danforth. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And don't forget that there's people with a lot of stories out there. You just have to have time to listen to them. Take care and have a great rest of your evening.